Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Matic. I am joined by Jacob Sanderson, as always, here on a Thursday morning. Jacob is, he's feeling good. He is in his apartment. He did not get, I was very ready for you to board the wrong flight back. I mean, I was ready for you to end up in Manitoba or Saskatchewan, all these funny Canadian names. Yeah. I mean, nothing makes me happier.
Well, I'm from Manitoba, so that would have been okay. I would have just walked on over to the parents' house and like, hey, I love you so much, but I flew home to see you unplanned. So that would have worked. Saskatchewan would have been in substantial issues. You don't want to hang out with the Rough Riders. But if we made it all the way back to Vancouver, the correct place, slept in our own bed. No flights planned anytime soon, so I should be ready to go for regularly scheduled programming on this here podcast for the foreseeable future.
Week one, you know, obviously always a little bit of an up and down. I did play Tutu Atwell in all of my high stakes single entry stuff. That was good. I did also play Lamar Jackson in all of my single entry high stakes stuff. So that was bad. I think he got 7 DraftKings points. And not only the tilt of watching J.K. Dobbins tear his Achilles a yard and a half short of the end zone, but then the tilt of Justice Hill coming in to get the touchdown instead of Lamar getting the touchdown. I mean, it really was one of those pretty brutal situations. So not a good GPP week in week one for me.
Yeah, I didn't play that in DFS, but I know, just speaking to like my entire seasonal portfolio, I was like, if I just draft all the Lamar Jackson and all the J.K. Dobbins, no matter what they do, every touchdown is beneficial for me. And naturally, that ended about 40 minutes into the season. That was unfortunate. The Justice Hill touchdowns definitely were turning me into the Joker. I did fine. I only played one team lineup this week because it was Vegas and it was insanity. I'll be back on my normal lineups this week. I don't know. We started off the year with a nice, beautiful minimum cash. We had Calvin Ridley in the lineup. We had Tyreek Hill in the lineup. We had Hayden Hurst in the lineup. We had Josh Palmer in the lineup. So that went for a nice 1.4 points on that differentiation point. But we'll not be betting on his services again.
Yeah, we definitely will not. All right, so week two, always one of the more interesting weeks because you get to see how much people are going to react to what happened in week one. Honestly, I feel like we're fairly unlucky that the Miami Dolphins are not on the main slate because I think we would have seen some historic single entry ownership for Tua and Tyreek Hill, which I mean, honestly, I don't know who's to say
it's
wrong or right. Right. Exactly. I don't even think it's that bad. There's only one game with a total above 50. That is Kansas City and Jacksonville. Pretty tight pricing week, which is generally what happens in week two, where all of the $3,000 guys from week one get a huge boost in price. And there's not obviously, you know, all the injuries that led to the $3,000 pricing. So let's begin with the Green Bay Packers at the Atlanta Falcons. I'm honestly interested in 0 players from this game outside of Bijan Robinson. I do think that the Tyler Allgeier stuff is going to be an issue for Bijan for the entire season, but I also expect it to be something that is not static, but that is dynamic in the sense of maybe Allgeier gets 50% of the carries inside the 10. But I mean, I feel like the Algier analysis does skip over the fact that Bijan scored a green zone touchdown. Like, it's not like Bijan had to do the ETN thing where he had to score from the 26. I think it was a 9-yard touchdown. And, you know, Arthur Smith, sure, he's a dick and he hates Drake London and he hates Kyle Pitts. I don't think that extends to Bijan Robinson. I don't think we're going to be a situation where all year long we're going to be cursing about his lack of usage of Bijan. On the Packers side, I mean, Musgrave seems fine for 3,200. And in fact, I think that there's going to be some ownership pulled on Kincaid and Chig and Irv Smith Jr. and Dawson Knox and Jake Ferguson. So, like, I don't think we're going to see him be giga chalk or anything like that. The only thing that could make this game really interesting to me would be if Aaron Jones does not play. I'm one of the few remaining AJ Dillon truthers in the world, but this game is going to feature a lot of rushing attempts. I mean, the Packers barely wanted to throw beating the shit out of the Bears. You know, they wanted to run, and Jordan Love had 9.1 YPA and they still wanted to run. So this is a pretty boring game.
Yeah, it's definitely a boring game. Probably. I mean, we'll see. I guess it depends on who actually plays for the Packers, because, like, I see Musgrave and Reed popping ownership projections now, but that could easily change if once it's confirmed if, like, Aaron Jones is for sure in, if maybe Christian Watson even plays this week, we'll see. But I'm not probably playing a whole lot of this game. It would be Bijan, I guess, would be the main piece. Dylan's definitely interesting if Aaron Jones misses, for sure, but I'm probably leaning that he plays just based on right now. I don't think that Algier stuff is, like, coming that much out of Bijan as much as he's coming out of the rest of the offense. Like, I think they're going to get Bijan his touches. And then, like, even preseason, what I wrote about Algier was just, like, he's the player that is most dependent on Arthur Smith remaining a boomer. Like, they're going to get Bijan his touches. And if they decide to be a more balanced offense, there's just not going to be room for Algier. But if they still continue to funnel touches to running backs, you can get Bijan 20 and Algier 15 in the same game. Like, they ran 51 plays and they had 34 combined carries and targets for running backs, which is an absolutely absurd rate. They combined to run 28 routes on 22 plays. So if you're doing the math at home, that means, like, on multiple occasions, several occasions, they were running both of them in a route on the exact same passing play. So I think that makes Bijan, like, entirely viable. And I mean, at 5,500, Tyler Algier is, like, you know, he's kind of viable in the same way like Kareem Hunt was semi-viable in the mid 5K range for a couple of years on Cleveland.
I think that's a good point, actually, that the touches, Algier is not making Bijan's pie smaller. He's making Drake London and Kyle Pitts' pie smaller. That's actually the better point. And I have not heard anyone frame it that way. So I think that is a good, clear-headed analysis. I'm honestly not even in to Jaden Reed or Romeo Doubs if Watson doesn't play. I think it's just too low volume of a game, bad basically. Game. Yeah. All right, the next game, I actually think the line is bad and I think has the ability to be a really fun game, and that is the Las Vegas Raiders traveling to play against the Buffalo Bills. I think the Raiders, I mean, Jimmy G, say whatever you want. No one likes him. I don't like him either. Fully in command of that offense. He, you know, didn't force anything to Davante Adams, which is maybe not great for my bags because I'm so loaded up on Davante Adams, but I think is good for their offense all year. Josh Jacobs looked Josh Jacobs-y. They didn't really have to rely on Hunter Renfrow. Michael Mayer ran 9 routes. Like, it's going to be a boring offense, but I think they're going to be competent and, more important for fantasy, super condensed. It's going to be Davante Adams and Jacoby Myers and Josh Jacobs, and no one else is going to be fantasy relevant in this game. We'll see if Myers plays or not. He's in the concussion protocol. Maybe you could throw a couple darts at Renfrow, although he was playing behind DeAndre Carter and Christian Wilkerson. But that might be sort of your classic Renfrow is the backup and actually has no, there's no point in playing Hunter Renfrow if Jacoby Myers and Davante Adams are already on the field, I guess would sort of be the thought there. And then the Bills just look like such shit. I don't think they're blowing the doors off the Raiders. Like, I don't think this is a 30-10 game.
Yeah, I think Renfrow is in line to run probably a ton of routes if Jacoby misses. It's just like, you know, what exactly does Hunter Renfrow do here if Jacoby Myers is already on the team? Like, you're going to have Davante Adams surrounded by two receivers who are short, intermediate, best out of the slot, and a couple of tight ends. Like, it just seems kind of silly. But yeah, 19 of 26 targets. So 73% combined target share for Jacoby Myers and Davante Adams. That's absolutely outrageous. I hope that Jacoby winds up being okay. Adams also misses a foot injury. That just seems fake. Like, I don't care about any old dude who misses a Wednesday practice. I'll play Davante. I don't know if there's anyone else that I'm playing from the Raiders side. I'll play everyone from the Bills side. I mean, Denver looked like they were marching at will on Vegas in the first half. They wind up just really not having the guys in the second half. Greg Dulcich leaves with a hamstring injury. Marvin Mims leaves with a Sean Payton didn't really want to play him injury. And then they don't have Judy. So this week, you know, I think if you get a healthy Bills team, I respect the Jets defense. I could see them running up and down the field without much of a problem. Cook had a really strong role. I still have talent questions to him, but he had a strong role. Diggs obviously had an incredible role. And then, you know, I think like Gabe's always going to run a ton of routes. Dalton Kincaid ran a ton of routes. They actually did the 12 personnel thing that people were debating.
Yeah.
On like 75% of the plays. So like Liam's going to get there. Kincaid, I think, is totally in play at 3,300.
Kincaid is probably the best cheap play of the week. And this is a slate with such a lack of value that I think two tight end lineups are like pretty viable. Like, I think you can do Musgrave and Kincaid together. Like, a lot of the best points per dollar plays are all at tight end. You know, we got Laporta, we have Kincaid, we got Chig, we got Ferguson, we have Musgrave. Likely, if Andrews doesn't play, even Kate Otten at 3,100, Kylan Granson saw a bunch of targets. Like, there are like all of the sub $4,000 value plays are just all at tight end. And I mean, look, a guy won $1 million on DraftKings last week with a snowflake in his lineup from Kenneth Walker. He got 10.1 from Kenneth Walker. Like, it is kind of one of those things where we love to talk about strategy and we love to talk about, oh, you know, overowned, underowned, the Sims, yada, yada. But like the end of the day, like, you got to get the Tyreek. You have to get the guy who breaks the scoring system. You have to get the Kendrick Bourne. And I mean, honestly, to me, Kincaid is like a $4,700 player on DraftKings probably this week. And he's priced at 3,300. Like, he ran all these routes. They didn't really ask him to block all that much. Like, he's just, Liam's going to get there, right? The one they started out the game. Deontay Hardy played like the first 10 snaps, got three targets. And I'm like counting my Sklanskis. I'm like, oh, I nailed this Deontay Hardy thing. And then Josh Allen threw a pick to him deep down the field and they put him on ice and they just started playing Kincaid. So Kincaid is the gold star play from this game for sure. I'm not that in to playing Josh Allen personally. I think you could do Allen, Diggs, Adams, Kincaid, and that's fine. But I prefer the next game, which is the Baltimore Ravens traveling to play against the Cincinnati Bengals. There's just some stink on the Bengals after how bad they were against the Browns. Honestly, some stink on the Ravens too, because the passing game, you know, Zay Flowers looked incredible, but it wasn't the, you know, air raid. Bateman's getting there. Beckham's getting there. Andrews is getting there. It wasn't, you know, 38 passing attempts, Lamar looking dialed in. I think the whole thing will look better with Andrews than with Likely in there. No disrespect to Isaiah Likely, but he is not Mark Andrews. And I haven't really heard anyone make this point either, but these guys, they clearly do not like Justice Hill or Gus Edwards all that much. I mean, both of these guys have had like, I mean, how many times have these guys had an opportunity to be the lead back? I actually saw Chris Towers from CBS tweet this. Justice Hill, we're entering into, I believe, year five, maybe year six of his NFL career, and he's never had a game with more than 10 carries. Never. Never. I mean, pretty damning stuff. And that could obviously tilt the Ravens to be a little bit more pass heavy. And then the Bengals stuff is just so obvious. It's an obvious buy low spot on Chase, on T, on Boyd, on Herb. I mean, Boyd is 3,800. That is as free as it gets. I don't even like Tyler Boyd, but if this game goes over, if this is 31-28, I mean, Boyd is a perfectly cromulent bring back to a Lamar, Zay Flowers team. And Zay Flowers is obviously, I don't even really care. I don't even really care what Zay Flowers' projected ownership is. He is a smash this week.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers that I'm seeing are not high enough yet. I think he'll come in. I think he's got to come in and threaten 20, probably. It's fine. I mean, I think people are making a little bit too big of a... I'm going to do the Sam Sherman straw man thing here, but I'm like, why are people caring so much about his low ADOT? Personally, I think that it's good where when you get a rookie who comes in and they just have to force feed him the ball on every single play. I come away from that very, very excited with Flowers. I'm hoping that at some point this season they start to tilt the Odell routes towards being Bateman routes, but I imagine we're probably a ways out from that. So I think it's pretty much Zay and Andrews are the only guys you can play. Baltimore, of course, as well as Lamar Jackson. And yeah, T. Higgins, fourth most air yards in the league this week, despite registering zero receptions for 0 yards. So pretty nice bounce back opportunity spot for him. Ravens lost Marcus Williams this week, so that's a hit to their secondary as well. Yeah, I think probably Burrow doubles with Zay, or Lamar doubles, or even Lamar singles with pick a Bengal. All that seems totally fine to me. It's a good buy-in spot on these offenses.
Yes. I mean, are you interested at all in Justice Hill at 4,900?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
I'm not really either. Okay. So then this next game is fascinating in the sense that I don't think projected ownership is right on Seattle at Detroit. I mean, this is, of course, the Bonanza game last year. Everyone played TJ Hawkinson, and it was, I believe it was the 14th highest scoring game in NFL history. The counterweight to that is that actually you could argue everyone in this game, even at their current projected ownership, is actually projected too low because the Seattle Seahawks do not have their starting left or right tackle to the point that they just signed 41-year-old Jason Peters, and he might even be expected to play this week for the Seattle Seahawks. Mm-hmm. They also disseminated their backfield in a three-way split. The nightmare scenario of DJ Dallas playing third downs was accurate in week one. Now, maybe that was a reaction from Pete Carroll saying, one, Charbonnet's not ready to do this, and two, Geno is out there getting absolutely killed, so we got to just have someone we trust back there blocking on long down and distances. My gut reaction is that I don't care, and that, you know, if I lose because Aiden Hutchinson is making Geno's life hell, then like whatever, it is what it is. But outside of Amon-Ra St. Brown, I don't think anyone in this game projects to be owned quite enough. Maybe Laporta, but I'm definitely going to hop back on Jahmyr Gibbs at 6,300. He looks really strong to me. Lockett looks pretty strong at 6,100. And I actually think JSN is playable as well. I think his routes will trend up, and the Jake Bobo, Colby Parkinson part of that offense will trend down.
Yeah, I think that Dave Montgomery projects to be owned, but not by me. I'm going to be riding with Jahmyr Gibbs on this one. They have to play him. They won last week, but their offense, frankly, did not play well enough to win. They were gifted a defensive touchdown from Kadarius Toney. I think in this spot, like, you look at what their receivers give them, right? They have Josh Reynolds made a couple plays. Marvin Jones is a total liability. Jahmyr Gibbs, I mean, Amon-Ra St. Brown, bless him, but he's an incredible slot wide receiver, but he's an intermediate option. Jahmyr Gibbs is the only speed, explosive option in this backfield. You look at all the routes David Montgomery ran, but he was targeted zero times despite running near 70% of the routes. I think that's pretty telling in terms of how they view him. It's not like they were actually trying to scheme anything in the receiving game, or Goff was even looking his way. They were just out there, you know, letting him be reliable so that Jahmyr Gibbs didn't fuck up, basically. You know, you get off that spotlight game, you have Gibbs has seen an NFL game now at this point. Dan Campbell even talked about, we just wanted him to get a chance to see it. Yeah, I think Gibbs projects as a really strong play who I don't think will be very owned at 6,300. He's definitely the kind of guy that I want to keep clicking each week at low ownership until we eventually see the pop game for him. And yeah, on the Seattle side, I won't lie, I'm a little sketched by what we saw out of him against the Rams. Like, I thought that Geno was going to be solid this year. The chance that he turned into a pumpkin is not something that I really played while drafting, but it definitely feels more possible now. I would probably play this most through Ken Walker because the three-way split to me doesn't even really affect him. Like, he probably wasn't playing those third downs regardless. So it just means that Charbonnet's role is being further diverted. Probably more inclined to play like Walker, Goff, Gibbs, St. Brown or something. But I'll experiment with Geno Stacks. If they're going to truly be as not owned as they look right now, I will have to have no choice but to play some Lockett and DK Metcalf at sub five.
Yeah, that is the lean. My initial lean was that this is the game that I would look to stack in, you know, the $50, $100 single entry. And I was thinking the right way to do it is probably Geno, St. Brown, Laporta with Lockett and Metcalf, or Lockett and JSN, or Metcalf and JSN.
Nice.
I don't know the right. I'm still working on the right way to get there, but my lean is that this game will be a little bit less owned than Jacksonville, Kansas City. Maybe that'll be wrong. Maybe the high price on Mahomes and the total lack of clarity on Kansas City wide receivers coupled with the return of Travis Kelce will actually make that not true. And I mean, Christian Kirk will also probably be completely unowned after the stinker that he put up last week. So that's what I am debating right now. I would say my favorite one-off, if you're really going in this direction, is probably Jahmyr Gibbs, because pricing is just kind of tight this week. And I think 6,300, Campbell said he's going to give him more touches. He actually had more high-value touches than Montgomery did, more targets plus red zone touches. And he could have scored also. I mean, if he scores on that play where he slips down, like, none of this is even a discussion. No one who drafts him feels bad. Like, it's completely fine. But figuring this game out and taking a stance on it one way or the other, saying the offensive tackle stuff really matters for Seattle, and until they get that figured out, none of this matters. Or saying it was a 1 week weird thing, like, whatever, they'll also get it figured out, is like, that's probably the most important stance to take. Next up, I've seen a little bit of chatter about Indianapolis at Houston being the vomit bowl game. You know, everyone's cheap.
Yeah.
Richardson's not even really that expensive. Stroud is free. Texans wide receivers are free. All the Colts players, every Colt player is free. I mean, you could tell me that Anthony Richardson, Michael Pittman, and Tank Dell end up in the optimal because you got to play, you know, you got to play St. Brown and McCaffrey with them or whatever. I see that. Again, not quite sure how I want to play it. I also would maybe take a stab on Zach Moss if he's active, because Deion Jackson was so bad that it was.
Oh my God.
It was so bad. I couldn't even believe it. I mean, very rarely do running backs go from getting 80% of the snaps to zero, but Deion Jackson was so bad that I could actually see it.
He must have been getting paid under the table from Jonathan Taylor. Like, that's the only, he was absolutely horrendous. Like, he had 13 carries for 14 yards and two fumbles. That's an accomplishment.
Yeah.
So yeah, Zach Moss is going to get all he can handle. I mean, I think they would have turned to Evan Hall, except Evan Hall got hurt himself. And then on the comeback drive, they're playing Jake Funk.
I mean, Jake Funk getting in is a sign that your running game is not where you want it to be. And I mean, Houston, their wide receiver group should be narrowed out this week, because Mechie was a healthy scratch. And then
he
had a hamstring injury. Unclear if he was, you know,
like, he was in the Devin Achane category of healthy now, but previously unhealthy scratches.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, like, he has had this hamstring injury all off season, so it's like unclear what is exactly going on there. I don't think he would go from not playing last week to Tank Dell's, you know, 50% of routes with Noah Brown staying at 50. Like, I would think that the 11 personnel will be Schultz, Woods, Tank, and Robert Woods.
Collins.
Yeah. Who, by the way, 14 points last week, a bunch of targets, good air yard profile.
Yeah.
I know that has to make you happy.
Oh, it was lovely to see. I suspect that Nico Collins is the week's most likely candidate to be a really sneaky play until you find out that he's 23% owned in your high stakes tournament on Sunday when you flip over the cards. Like, I just, with just this whole week, like, just knowing how DFS content works, we're inbound for a couple straight days of Did you see Nico Collins' air yards? Did you see Nico Collins' targets per route run? What if he even runs more routes because Noah Brown was staying on the field for some 11 personnel snaps? And then you all of a sudden get the, wait, did you see who the Colts had in their secondary and how Calvin Ridley completely eviscerated them? Man, that's Nico Collins' role now. And then all of a sudden he's going to be like 22% owned. So I love Nico Collins. I hope that he has 25 points for my best ball bags. If the ownership scheme gets to where I think it might, he might become somewhat unplayable. And then I would probably go to the Tank Dell route, but I would do it stacked. Like I will 100% play a CJ Stroud double stack this week. They were passing the ball. Like they were up and plus pass right over expectation, not even just in terms of that they were down and kept passing. They were legitimately aggressive. That's going to be the way to beat the Colts anyways this year. It's going to be a continual pass funnel defense. So I think you can play Stroud with Collins for sure, because I think that's your upside play. But either Dell, or you can do Dalton Schultz. He ran 49 to 54 routes. He did turn it into 4 yards, but hopefully this week get a little bit better from him. The usage stuff in the preseason with him did not at all carry over. So I think he's viable in stacks. And ideally, you're probably running it back with Michael Pittman, whose role was phenomenal this week. You're getting helped out by the fact that Anthony Richardson threw, I think, all but 3 passes to the right side of the field. So just any Colt who frequently lines up on the right side of the field is being systemically benefited by Anthony Richardson, while Alec Pierce is unfortunately never going to see a target again. And yeah, Pittman came in absolutely 11 targets, I believe all 11 in the second half as well. So they really got the ball to late. You mentioned Granson, and yeah, I'll definitely play Richardson too in the stacks. I'm not playing Stroud.
Yeah. I also just like a true gutter pick. I don't hate Josh Downs either, because he played more slot snaps than I thought I would. I thought he would be situational 9-route only, you know, but they just immediately, I mean, they only had 4 wide receivers on their initial 53. Yeah. So I guess they just kind of thought he was good. I mean, earlier.
They only had 3 receivers on their initial 53. They had to sign back Isaiah McKenzie.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty wild for a third round rookie to basically be a locked in every down starter, which he was. So I'm unclear if I'm going to use this as a vomit stack, but it's also like, these are two teams with rookie quarterbacks where they're figuring it out playing in a dome. Like I've seen crazier things. And I also thought, just like a football guy note, neither of them looked like overwhelmed or lost or like I was scared for their lives. You know, the way like you watch a really bad quarterback, like you watch Zach Wilson, you watch Nathan Peterman, you watch, you know, honestly to me, even Sam Howell, like Howell is bad. And you watch them and you're like, these guys have no hope of ever figuring it out. They'll never just get to that spot to where they're just confident in what they're doing. And I thought both, and actually I thought that about Bryce Young too. I thought all of them were just like,
yeah,
they're not good right now. Like they're going to, like the pick that Richardson threw to basically ice the game for the Jaguars was like awful. It was but that's not even a pick that like Zach Wilson would make, because he wouldn't even see that throw. He wouldn't even see that right. was something that like could have worked out. So feeling kind of bullish about both of them. All right. The big,
I agree. As like putting on the Colts fan hat, my takeaway was Anthony Richardson is the future and the truth. And I was very excited. Like he looked relaxed all game. He looked confident. He was interacting with the crowd. Every time he made a mistake, he was like taking it in stride. He smiled, I think, for like 3.5 consecutive hours. It was just like, he was a vibe. It's total vibes based analysis. But like, what you don't want to see the rookie quarterback is like getting really tense. He's getting really upset when things are going wrong. He's like scrambling around. He looks like he's totally untethered. That was not Richardson. He looked like very calm and collected throughout the game. So I have a lot of confidence in him. And I thought, you know, he made a bunch of mistakes, but he also made some really impressive plays. Like, did you see that fourth down play when he was scrambling to his right? He threw like all the way back across his body over the middle of the field and just like nailed one to Pittman. That was one of the most impressive plays of the weekend. It's probably ill-advised, but I was impressed.
I mean, vibes-based analysis, I think, can actually serve you well with, I mean, vibes-based analysis is going to help you early on in the season where the data is very noisy and where we're making a lot of guesses. Cause if your vibe is correct and like, if you're directionally accurate, I think that will be useful. All right. Next game, Kansas City Chiefs traveling to play against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Sounds like Kelce is going to be back and playing in this game. I believe he was able to get in a practice on Wednesday. Yeah, he was a limited participant. Now, will he run 80% of the routes? Like, if they're up 10 points, is Noah Gray going to play a little bit more? Absolutely. Jaguars seem like we already know exactly what they are going to be. Etienne is going to run a bunch of routes, probably not going to earn a ton of targets, probably 4 to 5 targets per game. He's probably not going to get very many opportunities at the goal line, though. If Tank's big, I mean, Tank Bigsby, that game that he just had, I mean, that was the Isaiah McKenzie against the Chiefs from last season game. Isaiah McKenzie fumbled twice against the Chiefs last year and dropped a first down that would have converted for them in the red zone. I mean, Tank did everything wrong you can do as a rookie running back, still got rewarded with the touchdown. And I think you mentioned this in the in your Substack this week, but it almost seemed like maybe a vote of confidence just to keep him from going to zero, just be like, okay, you fucked up, we'll put you back in the game and we'll give you an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, he looked like he was a member of the 1919 Chicago White Sox. Like, I felt he was actively throwing the game. Like, at one point, he picked up a live ball and then put it down. And then, like, the Colts were able to just get it. It was crazy. And, yeah, the fact that then, after all that, they were like, no, Tank. Like, we're still tapping you on the helmet. Go in there and convert this touchdown. Pretty bullish signal for him long term. I'm not super sure that it's like ETN will never get a green zone touch. Like, and I went through all these in the Substack, but I like literally like took a note every single short yardage carry throughout the game. And for the most part, when they went to their jumbo package, they were generally putting in Bigsby. Of ETN's short yardage snaps, all but one of them were out of like shotgun formation, 11 personnel. Only one of them, he stayed on the field for a jumbo set. There was even one where he like walked back to the huddle on a 3rd and 1. And then he like must have gotten the call in, ran off the field. Bigsby comes in, converts it. Bigsby goes back to the bench. Etienne comes in the very next play. That was the most like explicit, we're subbing in Bigsby for this play. The touchdown series was a little bit different. Etienne had played 8 consecutive plays, had gotten 3 or 4 touches. He just run this big motion play out towards the sideline. That just kind of seemed like the type of play that you sub out after regardless. So to me, it's more, they're going to use a high proportion of Bigsby snaps in these situations, but ETM will probably still get some looks. And as we saw last week, he's also very able to score from anywhere on the football field because he's very good. So I'm pretty excited about playing ETM this week. I'm excited about playing Ridley, of course, despite the ownership. And if I was to give you the odds of -1200, Michael Leone plays Christian Kirk in the Thunderdome this week, where are you taking that bet?
Yeah, I mean, I think that feels bettable up to -2000. I mean, I'll probably play Christian Kirk this week because I
also will play Christian Kirk this week.
We are at such a weird point in DFS in general where, like, you know, half the people are brain players and 20% of the people are Sims players, and then 30% of the people are just like feeling it out and trying to have a good time. And I mean, I don't really know most weeks what is like actually optimal. My gut feel is that in a spot where the Jaguars are probably going to have to try and keep up with the Chiefs offense, that it makes sense to play less heavy personnel, almost no 2 running back stuff, like 11 personnel just more often, which Kirk would be the biggest beneficiary of. I also just can't shake the first 5 years of Zay Jones's career out of my brain, where he was like a nothing, where he was actually a zero and no one cared about him. He has been awesome as a Jaguar. That touchdown last week was nasty. I mean, that was a very high level skill play. Ridley is going to earn, I mean, Ridley is going to get Davante Adams level targets. I think probably if you told me that Ridley's efficient ownership in like the Sim Bros were like his efficient ownership is 35%, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know. That makes sense to me. Cause the Chiefs defense is not very good. And they actually just got waxed by a player who's like Calvin Ridley, but not as good, in Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, Calvin Ridley, I think, is clearly a better football player than he is. And the Chiefs couldn't do anything to stop Amon-Ra St. Brown. So totally makes sense on the Chiefs side. I mean, I must just hate myself because Sky Moore, $4,100, all the routes.
You have to stack him with Kirk. You have to do the all Wisprit slot high stack with Sky Moore and Christian Kirk.
The way that this goes bad is that Rashi Rice just gets all this, like, Rashi Rice goes from, what he run, like 14 routes last week or something like that, maybe 11 routes. Yeah. So then he goes, so Sky goes
now he
from
runs 22.
Yep. There you go. And because Rice looked good. I mean, he looked like, okay, I don't exactly know where I'm at on this play. I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to do, but my job is to get open. So I'm going to go get open. And that's what he did. I also wonder if Ross plays more this week, that like last week was like, Ross hasn't played an organized football game in like 4 years. So let's just even see if he can do it. He went out, he got a catch on his only target. Like there's so much in flux. Like Watson snaps could go up. Watson snaps could go to zero. Kadarius Toney could be a healthy scratch. Kadarius Toney snaps could go up. I mean, because Toney is the only one that can actually like get open at will, you know? Yeah. Like Toney's actually the only one that can get open. And the Chiefs can't be dicking around. I mean, the Chiefs cannot start 0-2, you know? Like,
no.
0-2 start is so bad if you are a team that wants to win a Super Bowl. So, like, you could tell me that goes any way. You could tell me that goes from Toney literally doesn't play because he can't be trusted to, like, MVS can't get open anymore. Watson is, like you know, like, I mean, we don't know. We just don't know.
We just don't know. This is one where, like, if I was still spending a lot of my life doing like 20 maxes, it would be way more fun to just like spin the randomizer wheel and just, you know, pick two Chiefs in every lineup and see what happens. I'll probably be playing like five lineups, so it's going to be much more challenging. Yeah, I think I'll probably play Rice in at least one, just on the off chance that they play him more. Like, he seems like the most obvious candidate to play more snaps since he was good and he didn't sell the whole game. I think Toney, yeah, I mean, Toney could go totally either way. Like you mentioned, for all the reasons you mentioned, it could go completely either way. He could be a total smash. He could literally not play. Sky is the top one because, like, at least with Toney, if Toney gets 25 routes, he's getting 8 targets. So, like, if you get the bet right on the routes, you're getting the bet right on the targets. Sky had the routes, but he might lose the routes. And if he does get the routes, he still might not get the targets. So that's probably a little tougher one for me, where you're like, you're hoping that they don't punish him. And then you're also hoping that he's like part of the game plan, which he just wasn't. I mean, he runs, felt like half the routes he ran last week were like horizontal clear routes where he's like running across the line of scrimmage and he's like wheeling up the sideline and never being even looked at. So tough for me. If Kelce plays, I'm playing him for sure. If there's any concern about the injury, and I get a chance to play under-owned Kelce in a really high over-under spot, I'm definitely doing that. It'll be hard to pick exactly who to play with them. Maybe December comes early for Jerick McKinnon at 0-1.
No. I actually think they're gonna play CH a lot. I think it's just the three-man stuff. It's three-man stuff until it becomes untenable. And it really should have been untenable in week one. Although that game was very winnable by the Kansas City Chiefs. They made some tactical errors. And they also had a pick six that was, I think Robert Mays screenshotted it. Maybe it was Danny Kelly, where the screen grab shows the ball in Kadarius Toney's hands. He's across the first down line. It's got it in his hands. And that turned into a pick six for the Lions. So, like, there's a lot of noise in one game. The Chiefs are probably not freaking out internally. They definitely will be freaking out internally if they lose this game. So we'll see. I'm gonna say Sky Moore is the guy that loses me the money this week. That's probably what I will do. It's actually between Sky, Rice, and Toney. I feel pretty good that one of those guys is probably the guy you should be playing. I just and I'm leaning with Sky.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm good.
All right. Next game, the Chicago Bears against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, Fields.
And in the next game.
Yeah, you can play Fields naked. I mean, Fields was god awful last week. From a fantasy perspective, the thing you could say that helped him out was that they just kept him in garbage time. They were just like, whatever, like we gotta do something. Like we can't, I think they had 7 points going into the fourth quarter, if memory serves me correctly. Like, so they're like, we can't have that. But that's it. I mean, all the rest of them are unplayable. You cannot play any Bears wide. You could play Komet. Komet, depending on which expected points profile.
4,400 is a tough scene, but.
He had, depending on which expected points model you look at, he had like 18 and a half expected points last. Leone's model really discounted him, which is probably smart because he's Cole Komet and it's the Bears. And yeah, I mean, Godwin, Palmer, Otten, Evans, like, you know, the Buccaneers played really fast. And I think they were second in pass rate over expected last week as well. But I just am not that into playing Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I mean, you could do, that's the thing, like, in theory, you could double stack the Bucs because the Bears' defense is really terrible and they have some nice signals, but then you have to play Baker, and do you want to play Baker? I'd probably rather just play, like, a Buck, like, than do that. Like, I think you could totally play, like, standalone throwaway Mike Evans or standalone throwaway Chris Godwin, and that's totally fine. I'm writing my part two of the Hitchhiker's Guide. Last night I started. I'll have that up. I'll finish that tonight, put it out. I had the displeasure of watching Rashad White play football for 19 touches. He looked atrocious in this game. The rush yards over expected came in at minus 2.4 per attempt. I thought that was earned. We'll see what happens in this backfield. Like, if he has the same role that he had last week, he projects incredibly well at 5,500. But he's the sky more of running backs for me, where like that could go at any moment in time where they just say, like, we're done with this. Sean Tucker, let's see if you can do a little bit better. So probably not going to be going into his range. But, I mean, totally, if he gets the same role, falls in the end zone twice, you feel like an idiot for fading that.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of vomit running backs, I would probably prefer Damian Pierce. I would probably prefer Samaje Perine. You could even talk me into Kyren. I probably couldn't do Brian Robinson. Actually, Brian Robinson he might end up being a little bit too owned, but that would be, I just, Rashad White is like it's like a style of bet I just hate to make, which is like, I don't really believe in the player. He looked awful. It's more likely to me that he gets supplanted in game than it is that he really eats that role. Like, I think Sean Tucker getting 11 carries would be less surprising than Rashad White running for 103 yards efficiently this week against like a really bad defense. So that's where I'm at there. I just not that really good of a game. The Chargers Titans game is interesting because the Titans run defense pretty good. Titans pass defense seems like it's the Titans pass defense of always. Also, the Chargers offensive line looks really good, which we have not really ever been able to say about the Chargers offensive line. And the stat, like, so let's say you did Herbert and Keenan or Herbert and Mike Williams or Herbert and Josh Palmer, who did run a ton of routes but just earned no targets, like, story of Josh Palmer's life. The bring back, I mean, Hopkins I actually think is underpriced for his role. And Burks at Chig actually projects like super chalky. I mean, he should have had a 50-yard touchdown last week. Tannehill just missed him, like, absolutely.
It's so 2023 DFS to say that a tight end who had zero receptions last week is now all of a sudden the chalk. Like, if we were doing this 5 weeks ago, I'd be like, I don't want to play that guy. And you'd be able to get him at like 2% ownership on the buy low model.
It is so funny. Burks looks like a guy I'm going to play a lot this week. To have a 95% route share coming off of the injury that he had, I was, that was one of the usage things that was really shocking to me. Also, Herbert's average depth of target. I mean, our projection was that Herbert's average depth of target would trend up with Kellen Moore. That was accurate. He took more shots downfield. I am not a Mike Williams guy in any way, shape, or form, so he will not be a part of the plays that I click this week. So it'll probably be, like, if I were to do this game, it would be, like, Herbert, Keenan, and Burks feels like a good core, like a nice way to start building a team.
Well, probably the biggest discussion point winds up being if Austin Ekeler misses this game, Josh Kelly is probably the most owned running back on the slate at 5,000. And I admit, I have to apologize a little bit to Josh Kelly because I've slandered him repeatedly throughout my time.
He was good.
Running with fantasy football. He's often been, I thought, like one of the worst running backs in the NFL. And I thought he was totally fine in this game. I mean, I would credit the offensive line more than I would credit the individual running backs. I thought he had a lot of wide open lanes.
But that's never been the case with the Chargers, right?
Right. That's never been the case with the Chargers. So that's a big improvement. And also, like, I've seen Josh Kelly, like, actively fuck up otherwise well-blocked plays several times in my life. And he did not do that in this game. Like, he was, as you would say, perfectly cromulent. So I would say I'm not quite as thrilled about the prospect of fading a heavily owned Josh Kelly against the Titans run defense as I would have been in past years, but I'm still probably going to do it if he comes in at like 25%+ owned, which if Ekeler misses, I don't see any way that he's not.
Yeah. So we are doing this Thursday morning, so we don't actually know how likely that is. I mean, Ekeler might have gotten to the point in his career where he just gets the rest day on Wednesday, you know, like I think you tweeted this yesterday, like DeAndre Hopkins is not practicing on a Wednesday all year. So like, don't sweat it. I think Adams, same way, Davante Adams, not practicing on Wednesday. So just don't expect it. And then Tuttle's on the Swolecast, Tuttle was on Derrick Henry, which I think makes sense. One, people are going to be worried about the snap share stuff, which I think will continue all year, but this will be, there's been a million backfields like this. I can't come up with an example where there's one guy who gets the ball every time he comes in, and then one guy who's just in there to run routes and a block. That's Tajay Spears. I like Tajay Spears. I think he's good. I think he looked good on the touches he got. I think if you're playing seasonal fantasy football, he's a great add or a great hold, like clearly a great contingent value guy. He might have a smidge of standalone value given how many snaps he played, but Henry is getting 20 touches. He might just do it on 36 snaps.
Yeah, totally agree.
All right, what do we got next? We have the Giants and the Cardinals. I don't know, play Zach Ertz if you want. Play Saquon Barkley if you want.
Zach Ertz, I cannot believe that in 2023 we had to watch Zach Ertz and Logan Thomas play on the same field and receive 18 targets. It was demoralizing. 10-6-21, incredible Zach Ertz line, not playing him. Not playing any Cardinal really. I'll play the Giants. Like, I don't mind buying back into the Giants, but I mean they were pretty run heavy to start this game against Dallas. Granted there was weather concerns, and they'll probably be allowed to be as run heavy as they want to be. I'll definitely play Waller. Like, I don't see a lot of ownership on him right now. Maybe that changes. He's been dealing with the hamstring stuff, but by all accounts, he's going to play. And he was like first read every single time they dropped back to pass in the first half. And then they pulled him in the second half when it was out of play and he was dealing with the hamstring. But if this game is, for as long as it's competitive and until Waller is actively not playing in the games, I'm probably loading him up for as long as we have the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I have no issue with that. I mean, my eventual hope is that the 11 personnel for the New York Giants is Wandale, Slayton, Waller, and who am I forgetting? Hyatt. I don't know how long it's going to take them to get there. Might take them to have a 2-5 start for them to get there, you know, but I do think that is the, you know, the Hodgins stuff, the Sterling Shepard, the, you know, it's just like, what's the point? What are we doing with Paris Campbell out here? Like, you know, it's just, Wandale is better at every facet of football than Paris Campbell. No disrespect. I know there are Paris Campbell truthers left out there. Honestly, if
no, Wandale you should disrespect them.
If Wandale is active this week, I actually might. I could. He'll probably play like 9 snaps, and it'll be.
He's gonna run 8 routes.
But I might do it. I mean, there's no viable There's no $3,000 guys this week the way there were last week. All right. Actually, we're getting to the tail end here, but we haven't talked about the most interesting stuff to deal with this week, which is what do you do with the Rams guys who went nuts last week, but against the 49ers? Kyren Williams, 5,000, Nakua, 4,900, Atwell, 4,700. My lean is that the 49ers defense is actually that good and it was kind of fluky week one and I'm not really that interested in them, but dumber shit has happened in the National Football League.
Yeah, if I'm playing any of them, it's probably your boy Tutu Atwell this week, just because Puka is going to have prohibitive ownership issues in a really bad matchup. I don't think you can play a running back against the San Francisco 49ers unless that running back is like an Austin Eckler, where you know all their value is coming from the receiving game. So it's probably Tutu is the only one that I could see a path for him getting there, and he won't be egregiously overowned. So that's probably the only guy I would play, but I might not even play him. Probably only playing him like as a bring back if I'm doing San Francisco stuff. And I mean, I'm pretty open to that. What's your take? Like, you might have seen a little bit more of this game than I did. Like, what is your take on this Rams defense? Because going into the season, we thought it might be the worst in the NFL, and yet the Seahawks could not accomplish anything offensively. Is that just like a weird game? Is it just that they know the Seahawks, or like are those 49ers going to steamroll them? Like, what should we expect in this one?
Well, Rams-Seahawks games are always weird. I don't recall those two teams ever playing a normal game in the history of these franchises. Like, even when the Rams were terrible and the Seahawks were awesome with Russell Wilson and he was cooking, they play weird games. And so, like, one, yeah, a little bit of weirdness. Two, I don't know. Like, there's, like, this uncalculable emotional element to football where, like, the defense comes out there and they're like, oh my God, we are just getting our asses handed to us. Geno can't do anything. Like, that plays into it. My guess is that the Rams defense is probably pretty bad and that the 49ers, like Debo and Ayuk, are totally premium plays. You want to talk about 2023 DFS? I actually think Debo might end up getting more love than Ayuk, which is, it's just wild.
I was just going to say, I'm staring at an ownership projection right now with Debo at 23 and Ayuk at 10. And I'm like, did Debo watch last week? And the question is no. They didn't, because the people aren't making those projections. The computers are. The computers did not watch the game. And it's fine. I mean, it's easily Debo could be the better player this week. But yeah, I think if you're getting a chance to like bet on the Ayuk ascensions being real, and you get to do it at no ownership cost to you and no dollar cost to you because they're effectively the same price, I'll do that for sure. So I'll probably play Ayuk this week and keep riding that wave. And, I mean, anytime you can get a low-owned George Kittle, it's worth a roll. So I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, that is actually a good point. One point on the Rams is that you might be tempted to do a little bit of leverage Tyler Higbee. Like, if Nakua is going to be 19% and Atwell is going to be 8% and Kyren's going to be 8%-ish, you know, right around those ranges, you might be tempted like, oh, let me click a little 1.8% on Tyler Higbee. No, his role is zero. Tyler Higbee, Tutu Atwell and Puka Nacua have sent Tyler Higbee to a shallow fantasy grave. Like, the whole Higbee thesis was, well, Cooper Kupp's out, like, they got to throw the ball to someone, and they like clearly have two guys to throw the ball to who are actually like good football players. So the Higbee stuff is done. And then, I mean, we should just mention Christian McCaffrey is like the greatest running back in football. And I think honestly, the way DraftKings pricing works now, where you want to get Jefferson, Tyreek, Adam, like the high-priced wide receivers are always more attractive. I think we're going to go through 18 weeks of the season, and Christian McCaffrey's like never going to be more owned than 11% in any given slate, and he'll break three of the slates. You know, like the rest stuff. We're going to rest him a little bit more. We're going to ease him in. I mean, they were kicking the shit out of the Steelers, and Eli Mitchell played 10 snaps, like. The McCaffrey thing is full steam ahead. All right, the New York Football Jets against the Dallas Cowboys.
Depressing.
You know, I there's nothing really interesting to say about this game. I don't think any Cowboy is playable really, other than Ferguson is like fine, and Pollard I'm pretty into at 7,500. I don't really care about scoreline effects. His role is actually better than I could have even imagined.
We were tweeting about it, that like the sick feeling when he got tackled inside the five, it was like the only, every time I've seen that in my life, I'm like Pavlov's Tony Pollard owner. Like, as soon as I see him go down inside the five, I'm just like seeing in my mind's eye Ezekiel Elliott like trundling onto the field to go take his 2-yard touchdown. And instead, Pollard stays on the field and he gets a touchdown and there's joy in the universe and there's song in the meadow. It was incredible. It's a great time to be alive as a Tony Pollard fan. And, you know, if I can't play him at 20% owned at 7,500 in a game where he might rest the entire third and fourth quarters, then, like, you know, what is America?
Correct. So the actually interesting thing here is, one, can you sell yourself on playing Breece and just saying he scores an 80-yard touchdown? I think I can. I mean, he is going to be utterly unowned, absolutely unowned. Like, we're talking like sub 5%. And the other thing is that the two highest projected ownership spots in this game are the defenses, the Jets defense that looked so good against the Bills, mm-hmm. and the Cowboys defense at even at 4,000 against the Jets. So right now they're projected for, I'm just looking at the base blitz projections that Cardi has up, but they're projected for a point more than every other defense. And an interesting thing that I have noticed is that from the sim players, from the Chipotle brothers, from Brian Hooper, from Petty Theft, from these guys, they actually will play the highest owned defense. Like, there was a great thread going around about how owned the Commanders were in high stakes stuff. And it was all the sim players who were playing the Commanders defense. And it was all the brain players who were playing other defenses. Mm. And, you know, there's an argument one way or the other. If the Cowboys defense is something like 10 to 14% owned versus 20 to 25, I actually think they could outscore every other defense by enough to make that worth it.
I think that the Cowboys defense is a very different situation than like the usual high owned defenses, which, like, usually the really high owned defenses is like the entirely league average defense playing against a really bad team who is cheap. Whereas the Cowboys is like possibly the league's best defense playing against a really bad team who's expensive. So, like, I think that the price winds up being a little bit more prohibitive. You're never going to get, I would be really shocked if you get like the 25, 30, 35% owned defense when they're 4K. But I also think, like, the path to failure is way narrower when we're talking about a defense that is actually legitimately good versus when we're playing like the Commanders, where it's like we're just betting on Josh Dobbs being bad. Like, and the Cowboys are good in a way that scores fantasy points. It's not like that they just like will prevent yards of touchdowns. Like, they're going to sack Zach Wilson like infinite times. Like, it's going to happen. Like, Micah Parsons is going to eat Zach Wilson on Sunday and leave him without a soul. So I will play the Dallas defense like a total square, and that's fine. Breece, my take is just, I can easily see how in the summer they looked at it and they were like, look, we have one of the best five defenses in the league. We have Aaron Rodgers. We have Garrett Wilson. Dalvin Cook is okay enough. We're going to ease our way into the season because we're 100% making the playoffs, and we'll have Breece Hall in the second half and he'll be the guy in the playoffs and we're trying to preserve him. Their fuck around and find out scale got entirely changed when Aaron Rodgers lost his Achilles. So I don't think that this team, like, now this team has to depend on their run game way more than they previously had to. And if you're looking at their running game, they're like, I think we have to play Breece Hall more than we initially wanted to, because he's probably their best pathway to winning games at this point. So could they get blown out by 35 and then Breece Hall touches the ball zero times in the second half? Yes. But I think for as long as this game is competitive, I would suspect that we see more Breece Hall than we saw last week, just because I think that they need to win games. Like, they can't afford to not try to win games. And I think in order to do that, they have to feed Breece Hall.
That was my takeaway as well, that they basically were like, well, would have been nice to bring Breece along slowly, but we're going to lose every game by 27 while Dalvin Cook plods for 3.6 yards per carry. So, like, I guess we better figure out if Breece's knee is all right, because we're not going to win by handing the ball off to Dalvin Cook. Like, Breece can score an 80-yard touchdown on any given play in a way that Dalvin Cook cannot. I still think, and I literally, I mean, they should sign Carson Wentz. Like, however bad you think Carson Wentz is, he's better than Zach Wilson.
He is infinitely better than Zach Wilson. Yeah, I think that they ultimately will. Like, I think that Zach Wilson's going to play this game. against Micah Parsons. And he is going to look like the worst quarterback on earth, and the Jets are just not going to have a choice.
Yeah. I mean, the most likely scenario to me is actually that Breece stinks in this game and that he gets 13 carries, 47 yards. The Jets lose by 17. Like, that's all very well in play. So right now I'm seeing, let's see here. What is exactly Breece's projected ownership? I bet it is so low. Right now I'm seeing 5% on him.
I got 0.5.
Yeah, that 5% feels rich. So, you know, it's just a matter of your risk tolerance and everything. Like, Breece is probably the lowest floor play I could ever imagine playing. Any lineup with Breece is going to be like 40 points off the optimal or whatever. But I do think it is worth considering. Final game actually has some plays I like, despite a lower total, the Commanders against the Broncos. I don't think either of the quarterbacks are in play, but I think Javonte, Brian Robinson, and Jahan Dotson are all pretty squarely in play here.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Howell was not encouraging, but I think that you have some level of hope in this game. It's just, I don't know. What's the over-under on this one? Like, pretty depressing, I imagine.
Let's see here. I got a team total of 18 for the Commanders and 21 for the Broncos. So that is It's a very low total.
Yeah. I think probably if I'm playing anyone in this game, maybe Javonte and maybe Dotson, right? I mean, do we apply that? Aren't you worried about Patrick Surtain covering Terry McLaurin so Jahan Dotson gets the second corner and he's only 4,900? That's maybe the angle that I would fall on here.
Oh, I didn't even think. I mean, I barely know defensive players' names, you know. But I was obviously my Devontae bags are very heavy, so I was watching that game. I was like, why does Jacoby Myers keep getting open? And I realized after watching for about two series, I was like, Devontae literally can't do shit. Like, Patrick Surtain is in his jersey. He just can't get open. And Jimmy, to his credit, I think old Jimmy probably would have just forced it in, you know, because he used to do that. Jimmy actually used to do that with Kittle, where Kittle, like, he was the guy who would target Kittle a lot, even if it wasn't really so much a Kittle game. But yeah, I just think he was taking what the defense gave him, and no one, like, Jacoby Myers was just open because the whole defensive attention was on Adam. So I do like that. Yeah. Maybe Surtain shuts down Dotson though. I mean, have we thought about it? Like, that could happen.
I think that NFL defensive coordinators are not as quick to go for the year two breakout versus the longtime star as best ball players. So I'm going to guess that they still view Terry McLaurin as the primary threat that needs to be taken out of the game. But yeah, Dawson at 4,900, that feels pretty good to me, just from like a talent at price perspective, even if the game environment sucks.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so that is the look at the week two NFL DFS slate on DraftKings. I am going to flag plant Treylon Burks against the Chargers, and my I'm playing him, but you shouldn't play of the week is Sky Moore for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, I love that. My I'm playing him that you shouldn't play is the other side of that game, which is Christian Kirk, even though I kind of think you should play him, but it's more just I'm playing him and I'm embracing that it's going to look like I'm a total idiot after the gameplay. And look, I think that this might become prohibitive if the ownership gets up, but I have to do it for the brand. I'm flag planning Nico Collins. He got the incredible usage week one. He goes into, I think, a really positive game environment. Do not play if he gets up into the 20% ownership range, but if he's living in the 10 to 15 range, I think it is entirely acceptable, especially in stacks. And the Nico breakout week is incoming.
There we go. All right, everyone. We're getting out of here. I'll be back tomorrow with Reebs. See you then.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.